Twisted Bars, Earl Stanley Gardner. Listen to and download free AI-generated audiobooks at threeords.com. The Project Gutenberg ebook of Twisted Bars. This ebook is for the use of anyone anywhere in the United States and most other parts of the world at no cost and with almost no restrictions whatsoever. You may copy it, give it away, or reuse it under the terms of the Project Gutenberg license included with this ebook or online. www.gutenberg.org. If you are not located in the United States, you will have to check the laws of the country where you are located before using this ebook. Title: Twisted Bars, author: Earl Stanley Gardner. Release date: August 11, 2026. Ebook 79,336. Language: English. Original publication: New York, NY: Doubleday, Page & Co., 1926. Other information and formats: www.gutenberg.org/ebook/79,336. Credits: prepared by volunteers at BookCove.net. Asterisk start of the project GUTENBRG EBOOK Twisted Bars asterisk asterisk Twisted Bars by Earl Stanley Gardner. Pug Perry was such a gorilla that he could twist iron bars into loops. Phil Dunton was such a little jigger that they called him Big Hat. With the other hands of the Circle C outfit, Phil acted right respectful before Pug's terrifying strength. Respectful, that is, until Pug trespassed on private range. Bill Carson, better known as Old Walrus because of the gray mustache, which drooped mournfully down either side of his chin, cast his mild blue eyes over the sun-swept street, then spat reflectively. "They's something going on as sure as shooting. Them bar why boys have got some devilment up their sleeves, and they're just walking round waiting for it to shake out." Sam Eaton, tall, broad-shouldered, upstanding, but with an expression of utter pessimism on his face, replied in a voice which sounded like the knelling of a bell. "They're hanging something on us, sure. Here comes Big Hat. Let's see what he says." What Big Hat's version of the situation might have been remained undiscovered, for at that instant a man from the rival Bar Y outfit walked behind Sam Eaton and, reaching out, clapped that individual a resounding whack between the shoulders. "Get off'n that sidewalk if ya ain't travelin'," he remarked, stopping as though to argue the point. "Ya can't stop traffic on the city streets that way." For once the expression of mournful sorrow left Sam Eaton's face. It was crowded out by a look of surprise which was even mirrored in the faded blue eyes of Old Walrus. Sam Eaton was supposed to be the champion fighter of the Mayama Valley. And the man who had so aggressively called him was a newcomer to the bar, Y Ranch, a rather small, wiry individual who weighed several pounds less than the strapping Circle C pessimist. It was Old Walrus who spoke first, age, gray hairs, and much experience giving him the right to advise. "Start running, cowboy. Ya done stepped on a hornet's nest." The Bar Y man stood his ground, his little sneering eyes fastened upon Sam Eaton. From nowhere in particular, Bar Y boys began to assemble from doorways, alleys, around corners. There was something tense and jubilant. In their attitude, a thrill of anticipation permeated the atmosphere. Sam's great fist crashed forward in a lurching, smashing blow, a blow that dashed straight for the other's jaw. The smaller man did not put up his hands, made no effort to ward off that terrific drive, but somehow, just as the great fist was within a fraction of an inch of his jaw, his neck moved swiftly, smoothly, easily, not much, just the width of Sam Eaton's knuckles. The blow whizzed harmlessly by, Sam being carried forward by his own vicious lunge. The newcomer did not seem to move. There was a slight flick of something, white below his right shoulder to be sure, but it could not have been a blow. His body did not pivot, there was no drawing back of arm and shoulder, no fierce clenching of fist. And yet, as Sam straightened, his head seemed to jerk, his face flushed, and his hand dropped involuntarily to the pit of his stomach as his mouth flopped open, gasping for air. As he stepped back, staggering slightly, Sam's eyes carried a look of bewilderment. There came a flash of motion, an easy rhythmic stab of speed, and one of Sam's eyes suddenly began to swell, puffing up like a young mushroom. That time the stranger had moved, all of the spectators could see that, but it was a motion unusual to the cow camp. The left arm had, straightened like a lightning bolt, darted through space, flashed back to his side. The man seemed to have made no exertion, no effort. It was merely as though a string had been tied to his left fist and had suddenly jerked the arm out straight, then snapped it back to the man's side. There appeared to be no force to the blow, and yet there was the swelling eye. With a bellow of rage, Sam charged, a charge that was merely a blind rush, fists hurtling, jaw thrust forward. This time there were two swift flashes of arm, and Sam sprawled backward in the thick dust of the main street. The Bar Y man turned with a slight swagger and walked on down the street. The few Circle C boys who were watching gathered about Old Walrus and the defeated puncher. Hell, it's one o' these newfangled boxin' professors. He's staying up at the Bar Y for the winter, and he's just showing off what he can do. All eyes turned to Phil Dunton, otherwise known as Big Hat. Phil was one of these small, wiry men who are extremely sensitive about their size. He always wore extremely high-heeled shoes and a very high hat in order to make him seem taller. In that country, the height of a hat was always directly proportionate to the size of the brim, so that Phil headgear seemed nearly big enough for him to crawl inside and use as a tent if necessary. How, you get the dope, Big Hat? I heard two of them talking, and I was common over here trying to tell Sam not to start nothing, but I seen I was too late. What's more, that's not the worst. This maverick has had shipped in a couple of sets o' these newfangled boxin' gloves, and he's going to teach all the punchers over there how to handle their mitts so they can lick any Circle C man in the country. Well, I guess it'll take more than a pair o' padded boxin' gloves to stop old Colonel Colt's little equalizer, burst forth Sam Eaton, dusting the fine, powdery dust from his clothes. Maybe them boys can get pretty fresh learning all these fancy passes with their fists, but my friend Colt has taught me something that no boxin' professor in the country can raise. A murmur of assent ran through the augmenting circle where the Circle C boys condoled their fallen champion. Wait a minute, lads. It was Old Walrus who spoke. That ain't a goin' to do, and ya know it. Them times have passed in this here country, and we'd all be getting ourselves into a heap o' trouble. Them boys can shoot too if they need to, and we can't go killin' off a lot o' good cowpunchers over nothing. Nope, we've been circumvented, and it's up to us if we're going to stay that way. That four-flushin' gang just happened to have this here boxin' professor winterin' there on the ranch, and they took advantage of it. That don't mean nothing except that it's our move. And what move did he have in mind? Asked one of the angry men. All eyes turned to the Walrus. The younger men at times resented the conservatism of his counsel, but one and all respected the bulligid old puncher for the strategist that he was. If there was a trick that could win the game, Old Walrus, with his mild, faded blue eye and his long, drooping mustache, could be counted on to be forthcoming with that trick. "Well, boys, speakin' offhand and hasty-like, I've got an idea this here. Professor is nothing but a shorthorn pilgrim that's wandered in here from the outside to take advantage o' the winter climate o' this section. In regards to his health, he's strong enough with his arms, but he's probably had one o' these here nervous breakdowns or got a touch o' rheumatiz or something like that. He ain't no puncher, even if he is dressed like one and is running around on horseback with them Bar Y boys there. Ought to be some way o' keeping him from enjoying his stay long enough to teach that bunch o' haspeens over there very much about this your manly art o' self-defense." The ring was silent for a moment. "To thunder with this here highbrow stuff," came a voice from one of the sunburnt fire eaters. "I'm going over to my war bag and strap me on a couple of six shooters, and then they can take all the boxin' gloves in the world and dump 'em on the Bar Y ranch. What's more, when I get these your shooters dangling on my hip, I'm going to hunt up one rabbit-eared boxin' professor." A muttered chorus of approval was drowned in the thud of hoofs as a horseman came pounding down the dusty street and reined up before the impromptu council of war. As the men of the Circle C turned, they confronted the sheriff of the county sitting easily astride a huge black, his star fastened to the outside of his vest, a sure sign that he was on official business. "Howdy, boys. I just happened to hear that there was some talk of an uppersin. Now here's the dope. I ain't narrow-minded, and I'm willing to overlook a lot, but I ain't aiming to have no feud start in this here county. From now on, the first puncher, whether he's Circle C or Bar Y, that gets to wearing guns off the ranch, and when he's in town goes into the hooscow. Ya can fight fair any way you want to, but guns is barred." The Walrus spat on the dusty sidewalk and surveyed the sheriff coldly. "How come you got tipped off to be over here with this here warning?" The sheriff grinned easily. "Now don't get on no high horse, Walrus, too. Tell ye the truth, I heard that the Circle C boys was going to try an organized campaign o' pickin' on the Bar Y outfit, and it was a Bar Y man that told me too. I done said I'd ride over and spread a warning, but I told them Bar Y boys that I'd seen a lot more o' life than a lot o' them, and if they got to crowdin' on the toes of a bowligid longhorn known as Old Walrus, they'd wish they'd never done it. I'm here to hold down the gunplay, but anything else ya can think up goes, and I don't aim to restrict your style, none, walrus. The old man beamed at the compliment. Wow, and did ye tell him that now? Wow, under those circumstances, Sheriff, we appreciate your official position and thank you for your sentiments. Boys, I guess we'll be ridden out to the ranch. There ain't nothing in town for us this afternoon, anyhow. This suggestion was greeted with storm. What? Let them bar, why boys bluff? Us into backin' out when we've got a legal holiday with nothing to do, why shucks? What's come over ya, walrus? We ain't going to let no boxin' professor bluff us out. Big Hat Phil Dunton was particularly emphatic. I got a date and I ain't going no place for nobody, the old walrus sighed. That's the way with ya young fire eaters. I was just trying to get ye away where we wouldn't have nothing rubbed in. It looks to me like that bar Y gang was loaded for trouble. Stay if you want. Two, but the less we give him to crow over, the less we'll have to wipe out. Stay if you want to, but we'd better be all stickin' around together. That bunch ain't much more than started. The old man's prediction proved to be correct. Before the afternoon had merged into evening, and before the evening had slipped away to the time of closing the Palace Theater, the official closing time of all Coyote City, four of the Circle C boys were wearing black eyes, eyes that were puffed and shiny. The Bar Y outfit seemed to have already had considerable advance instruction, and the punchers had laid aside the wild haymakers of the cow camp and instead fought with swift, deadly, short-arm jabs, jabs that came with speed and precision. In short, the Bar Y outfit had become formidable fighters, fighters who had very apparently been training, eagerly looking forward to this occasion and wearing chips on their shoulders. The town of Coyote City was the county seat of Mayama County and lay in the center of the sun-swept valley known as Mayama Valley. In prehistoric times, there had been a river in the valley. Now there was a depression in the glaring sand. The only water was that reached from deep wells. Sun, sand, and cacti surrounded the little city, which was supported entirely by the patronage of cowpunchers who came in from the adjoining ranches to spend their paychecks. The valley cut through two ranges of mountains. Those to the west gave a fertile, rolling pasture land where the Bar Y held nearly all of the grazing privileges. The eastern range was the property of the Circle C ranch. To the north and south, there were smaller ranches, but the two main ranches of the entire county were the well-established rival brands, which held the opposing mountain ridges, controlling untold thousands of acres in their grazing lands and fostering a deep-seated rivalry. Because of the formation of the country, the Bar Y boys and the Circle C contingent held infrequent meetings. It was only on legal holidays that the town of Coyote City held any great numbers of the two factions. On ordinary nights, a few men would ride into the picture show, and on Saturday nights, the stores did a brisk business, but there were relatively few occasions on which the men turned out in numbers. Big Hat Phil was sweet on the cashier of the moving picture show, a sweetness which was a matter of weeks and was patent and undisguised. The recipient of his admiration, however, a black-haired, snub-nosed bundle of feminine foibles, enjoyed the prestige of being virtually the only unattached girl of any importance in the little city and was inclined to take every advantage of her position. Her heart was besieged by a round score of cowmen, some half dozen of whom were intensely serious. If she had any preference, she carefully disguised it, and her smiles were just personal enough to be upsetting, yet impersonal enough to be noncommittal. It was a fair field and no favors. At the Circle C, the men took stock of injuries, compared notes, and consulted the walrus. It appeared certain that the cowpunchers, men who fought as they lived, with that wild, direct, vigorous mode of attack, could not stand up against the scientific fighting which the men of the Bar Y were mastering rapidly. In the past, the Circle C had enjoyed all the advantage. Big Sam Eaton had been a tower of strength, and there could be no denying that at times he had used his fistic prowess in other than self-defense. In fact, it had always amused the Circle C men to think that the Bar Y punchers hunted a hole when Big Sam was on the warpath. The shoe was now very decidedly on the other foot. The walrus declined to commit himself. I gotta go into Lowe's Angels Inn. Meet the big squeeze this week, and I got 101 things to worry me about. I ain't going to take on no problems in addition until after I've got all this business stuff out of my system, and even then I ain't makin' no promises. S'pose ya pick us up a boxin' professor of our own and bring the bird out here with ya, suggested Sam Eaton, whose black eyes had turned to a sickly green and who bitterly resented his downfall from the throne of fistic supremacy. Walrus shook his head. I don't want to have ya all get interested in something that's going to take up all your time. You are sort of a no-count outfit as it is, and there's lots of work to be done. You can earn more money ropping steers than you can shadow boxing out in the corral, and one of them things is bound to interfere with the other. What's more, it ain't no use to fight the other fellow with his own weapons. This is a time when we gotta use strategy, and I ain't going to think of it until after I've done got all this here business stuff off my chest. The edict was final, and those who knew the walrus best recognized the firm mouth that was concealed behind the drooping mustache. The walrus could be depended on to think up some scheme which would enable the Circle C to regain its self-respect and also its supremacy, but he would think it up in his own way. In the meantime, some of the others took the situation into their own hands, trying to find out some method whereby the boxing instructor of the Bar Y could be persuaded to leave the country. They acquired some additional information and a little experience, but no direct results, unless the black eye which was hung on the luckless individual, who approached the professor directly with a bribe to transfer his instruction to the Circle C, could be considered a result. The boxer was none other than Herbert Malone, a former candidate for championship honors. A spot on his lung which had developed after he had retired from the ring had caused him to winter in the South, taking advantage of a cattle ranch where he could be in the open air. He was not in a condition to indulge in any great amount of desperate fighting, but the few blows which were necessary when he was confronted by one of the unskilled punchers of the Circle C were hardly enough to make him draw a long breath, and he was making rapid strides in teaching the men of the Bar Y just how to handle their fists. Those who knew and would talk stated that the bunkhouse of the Bar Y resembled a huge gymnasium. Bags of sand hung from the rafters, and the men, under the personal supervision of Herbert Malone, practiced hitting those short-arm jabs which are so deadly in the ring, but which the average untrained individual knows nothing of. If the walrus could be said to be the slave of any particular form of dissipation, it was an overpowering desire to watch motion pictures in the making. Inasmuch as Fielding Spencer, director of the Sun Made Comedies, was a close friend of the old man's and one who made a hunting trip every year to the Circle C ranch, old Walrus had no difficulty in indulging himself in his pet hobby whenever he was in the City of the Angels. About the studios of the Sun Made Comedies hung all sorts of types: beautiful girls and near beautiful girls, fond mothers with infants, also fond mothers who left their infants at home and posed as flappers. In short, there was always a crowd of extras numbering all sorts and conditions, all types and styles, all ages and sexes, assembled about the doors of the studio. It was while Fielding Spencer was discoursing on his latest stunt in artistic lighting, leading the old cowpuncher around the lot, that he felt a tug at his sleeve. Turning and ceasing his discourse on lights and backlights, floods, broads, banks, and spots, he beheld the old man staring into the crowd of extras who thronged the gateway in the high, board fence. "Who is he?" asked the walrus, his mustache almost seeming to bristle as his eyes kindled with interest. The director followed his gaze, then laughed. "That Pug Perry, the toughest-looking bird in 17 states, bar none. He always takes the part of the heavyweight pug in the fight scenes and does the strong man's stunts. He's strong as an ox and can bend iron bars over his arm like you bend curtain rods." The walrus nodded. "That's my man. Send him over. I got a job for him on the ranch." The director looked at his friend with widened eyes. "Walrus, a fellow, never knows just what's going on in that mind of yours, nor what's in the wind. I don't know whether you want this fellow or not. He's strong as an ox, but..." Walrus interrupted. "I don't want the but part of it. I got a hunch, and when I gets a hunch, I plays it. There's always these buts that take the joy out of life and sap your confidence in what you want to do. I tell you, this bird is made for the part, and I want to talk with him, and if he's got any weak points, I don't want to know him. Call him over." Pug Perry proved to be a man of striking appearance. His face bore the marks of a considerable amount of external violence. His nose had been broken at least once, and apparently no one had taken the trouble to reset it. His jaw stuck forward like the prow of a battleship tearing into a head sea. His ears resembled two cauliflowers which had gone well to seed. His eyes were two small, beady glitters of light beneath heavy eyebrows, well covered by a projecting porch of skull. Here and there a missing tooth punctuated the smile which the giant gave as he lumbered over and extended a ham-like hand. The walrus, small, bowlegged, gazed over the 6 feet and a half of battered hulk with an appreciative blue eye. "Are you strong as you look?" he asked as soon as the introductions had been performed. Pug Perry did not answer the question directly. Instead, he turned and looked around the cluttered lot. Finally finding what he sought, he lumbered away and soon came back with a heavy iron bar. Opening his great jaw, he clamped the middle of the bar in his teeth, took a grip on either end, gave a heave, and pulled the ends down, making a perfect arch of the heavy iron. Next, he rolled up his sleeves, took the bent iron, swung it in one hand down upon the other arm, and as the bar struck those corded muscles, it whipped around until the ends nearly closed, making it appear to be a heavy iron hoop. "And that ain't all," boasted the giant. "I'll get a bunch o' nails and I'll show ya." Walrus shook his head, his long pendant mustaches swinging and swaying with the emphasis of his gesture. "No, ya don't. Y'are just exactly what I'm looking for, and I don't want ya to go no further. I'm convinced. How'd ya like a job for the next 30 days at steady pay, and expenses, all transportation to and from furnished?" Pug Perry's face beamed. Jobs at steady pay were none too frequent in the movie game at the time. The full 30 days, regardless o' how she turns out. Walrus nodded. "Here, wait a minute," came the desperate voice of Fielding Spencer. "It's only right you should know, Walrus, that this here hombre," Walrus interrupted. "Don't want to know, Pug, you're hired. The full 30 days goes. There's a maverick I want ya to chase off the range." The director sighed, the sigh of one who had attempted to do his duty, and who was blameless as far as results are concerned. When Walrus and his strange guest arrived at the Circle C Ranch, a council of war was in progress. The men were desperate, and the most desperate of all was Big Hat Phil. Dottie Manners, the cashier at the Coyote City Palace Theater, had recently made it plain both by actions and words that she liked manly men, men who could be counted on for protection in time of need. The boxing instructor, Herbert Malone, appealed to her, and she was showing a decided preference for the bar Y, men as a whole. Big Hat, with his diminutive stature, his small hands and tiny wrists, was distinctly at a disadvantage when it came to a comparison of physical prowess. While he was quick, with that cat-like quickness of the small, well-knit man, he had not the weight or the brawn to enable him to hold his own in physical combat with the more burly men of the rival ranch, and he lacked the science to make proper use of his speed. The world had been unkind to him of late, and his morose ways and clouded eyes bore evidence that Dottie Manners was more than merely a passing fancy with him. The men gave one startled glance at the flat-footed, barrel-chested giant who carried his distorted features slightly behind Old Walrus as the latter came chugging into camp in the flivver, and then they crowded around the car, forgetting their conference, eager to see what Walrus had in mind. One glance at Pug Perry was enough. "Boys," said the mild-mannered old fox, "shake hands with Pug Perry, the strongest man in Arizona." Hand after hand was crushed in the vise-like grip of the professional, strong man. The cowpunchers of the Circle C began to smile, those broad, expansive smiles which bespeak triumph. Perry turned to Walrus. "Ya said ya wouldn't tell me what ya wanted me to do until we got to the ranch, but that ya'd tell me then. What's my line?" Walrus smiled. "You will come into the big and thriven county seat o, Miama County, with me tonight, and when I give ya the word, you'll start. Wrappin' iron bars around your hands and twistin' nails with your teeth and all of that. Then I'll hand you a message to a party and ya go and deliver it, that's all." Perry looked suspicious. "But the job runs on the full 30 days? Walrus nodded. "Sure. I want ya to register as a permanent fixture, oh. The Circle C 30 days'll do it, but I wouldn't trust it to work in any less time than that." Amidst jubilant whoops of delight, the Circle C punchers made haste to break into war bags and to don bright colored shirts and long-haired chaps. It gave every evidence of being a big night. A Saturday, it was almost certain that a goodly contingent of the Bar Y punchers would be at the Palace Theater. So elaborate were the preparations of the Circle C men that the picture had started at the Palace Theater before the cowpunchers had dined, adorned themselves in their glad rags, saddled and ridden into the city. Whatever Bar Y men may have been in town were in the theater, and there was nothing to do but go on in and watch the show, trusting to luck for a conflict afterward. The Circle C men were anxious to see their protege in action and hoped to waylay some of the punchers of the rival ranch. Hardly had the delegation from the Circle C ranch reached the ticket window than it became apparent that Pug Perry was gripped by some form of violent emotion. He looked long and intently at Miss Dottie Manners, who presided over the destinies of the cash, and sighed. Pug's sigh was, like all the rest of him, very easy to perceive. Also, there was something flattering about that tremulous sigh. It was the gasp of a man whose heart simply has got up and walked off, completely lost. Dottie Manners patted her black hair and endeavored to look indifferent, but her startled eyes could not keep from returning to the face which towered above the heads of the cowpunchers, the face which was battered and banged until it led one to believe its possessor must have been used at some time as a human battering ram. Still, it was not a hard face. There was something sensitive about the eyes. Nor was all of this lost upon Big Hat Phil. He was first warned by that sigh of admiration which sounded like steam escaping from a defective boiler. By standing on his toes, he was able to see the self-conscious face of his queen as she patted her black hair in that manner she assumed when she felt herself basking in the light of masculine admiration. Big Hat sighed himself. It would seem that his troubles were on the increase instead of otherwise. It had been only 2 days ago that Dottie Manners had remarked that she simply adored manly men. Big Hat had stood to his full height, swelled his narrow chest, and elevated the lofty crown of his flapping hat to its highest point, while he had turned to receive her smile of admiration. To his surprise, she was not looking at him at all, but at some distant point, and there was a meditative something about her tone that made him feel very much a part of the background. Eventually, the punchers filed noisily into the show and shuffled down the board aisle to a place where several vacant seats showed in a row. Hardly were they seated than Pug Perry's voice came booming over the theater. "This here's one o' my pictures. You'll see me in this. I took the part o' Knockout Smith, the champion. Wait'll ya see me work." Heads turned in surprise, heads of both Circle C and Bar Y men. Across the theater, one Herbert Malone nearly snapped his neck looking across at the Circle C visitors, and thereafter he squirmed uneasily in his seat, nor was Pug's prediction unfounded. The picture had progressed only to the second reel when the hero and heroine were disclosed as spectators at a series of prize fights. The main event was pictured as being between Knockout Smith and Cyclone Kelly. The features of Knockout Smith showed clearly upon the screen, typical features such as were the delight of screen directors, in short, the features of Pug Perry himself. The cowpunchers of the Circle C looked on their visitor with renewed respect, a respect that was akin to awe, for Knockout Smith of the screen moved with such cat-like quickness and packed such a terrific wallop that Cyclone Kelly seemed to have no other use for the back of his head than to make dents in the floor of the ring. To men who knew nothing of variable speed photography or the numerous devices employed by wily directors, the feats performed by Knockout Smith seemed marvelous. When the screen battle had been concluded and Cyclone Kelly had hit the floor for the final time, when the camera had registered a close-up of the battered, battle-scarred features of Knockout Smith, the champion, there came a flash while the scene shifted back to the hero and heroine. At that instant, from the back of the theater, there sounded the patter of feminine applause, the dainty clapping of enthusiastic palms. Pug Perry leaned back in his seat and smiled. "Pretty nifty, eh?" Big Hat slumped in his chair. No need to ask who had applauded. He did not turn his head. The clapping could have come only from the cashier's window. Big Sam Eaton, deposed pugilistic champion of the Mayama Valley, did not gloat over the possibilities of the situation now that Pug Perry had joined the Circle C group. His pessimistic mind worked, as ever, upon gloomy channels. He leaned across two intervening punchers in order to whisper to Walrus, "If Perry kills that bird, won't we be liable as accomplices or some such things? Me, I don't want to get hung." The whisper carried across the theater, and Herbert Malone mopped a perspiring forehead with a red bandana handkerchief. Walrus shook his head while he stroked his long mustaches. "He won't kill him, just only maim him for life." Malone coughed, a dry, nervous cough. When the picture show had drawn to a close and the hero and heroine had embraced for the exact footage allowed by various unemotional censors, the audience shuffled along the board aisles, out into the open, and over to the Barrel Soft Drink Parlor. In times past, the Barrel Soft Drink Parlor had been called the Barrel Saloon. The word saloon had been removed by the simple process of adding another coat of paint, but the word defiantly showed through the paint, which had been added, indicative of the difficulties of enforcement of prohibitive legislation. Within the cool interior, there were soda fountains, bar, and rail. To the initiated was known the secret signal by which a white liquid could be transferred from beneath the bar to a small glass and served with the whispered admonition to drink it quick. It was here that the various cowpunchers held informal club. When Pug Perry entered the place, there was an expectant hush. All eyes were turned upon him. As though by accident, an iron bar reposed on the counter. Near it were some heavy spikes. Pug Perry seemed fascinated by the iron bar. Picking it up, he put it in his massive jaw and clamped his teeth. His hands sought either end of the bar. There was a heave. Perry took the bent bar and rolled up his sleeve, bending it into a hoop over the muscle of his arm. He picked up one of the big spikes and twisted it between his fingers. One by one, silently, furtively, men of the Bar Y outfit left the place, slinking out of the door and into the night. The muffled thud of hoofs sounded from the street, and the Circle C boys were left in sole possession. Herbert Malone had not been in the room. Apparently he had faded immediately after the picture show. The Circle C men became hilarious. The Walrus received many enthusiastic thumps upon his back. Much White Mule was slipped over the counter. Big Hat, however, did not share in the general jubilation. He worked around to the Walrus, and when he had a fitting opportunity, suggested that the time had probably come when Pug Perry could be returned. He had performed his duties, made the world safe for Coltocracy. The Walrus looked his surprise. Shucks, we just got him started. We gotta run that maverick of a boxin', Professor Plum Outta the Country. I opine he's now headed for parts unknown, leaving a shaken buncho pupils behind him, but we gotta keep Pug here long enough to make sure. I got him tied up for 30 days, and here he stays. Disconsolate, Big Hat wandered out into the night. Subsequent events proved that Pug Perry had done all that could be expected of him and more. All in that he had put the enemy to rout. More in that he had elected himself king of the Circle C. At first, the cowpunchers had paid willing homage, given him the best cuts of meat, the choice desserts, listened to his booming voice as the final decision upon all disputes, but finally Perry seemed too much. He grew arrogant and domineering. Tactfully, Walrus approached the subject. "Well, Pug, I guess there ain't no need o' ye stickin' around no longer. This here boxin', Professor has beat it, and the rest o' the Bar Y boys seem to have tamed down quite considerable. I guess ya can hit the grit back to the movies if your heart is pinnin' that way." Pug shook his battered head. "I ain't goin' until the month is up. She was a month's job, and I'm stickin' by my end o' the contract, and you can stick by yours." Casually, Pug picked up a large spike which was lying on the bunkhouse table and twisted it between his fingers, much as a nervous person would play with a piece of thin wire. Walrus nodded. Oh, course, she was a month's job, and I wasn't figurin' on short changin' ya any. I'll just pay ya off on a month's time, and ya can have the advantage o' not havin' to work." "That's all right, too," rejoined Pug, his narrow eyes squinting with malice, "but I like it here. The contract was for a month right here on this ranch, and here I stay, and if anything should happen to make it unpleasant for me—" He did not finish the sentence, but contented himself with twisting the spike. Walrus tried diplomacy. "Fielding Spencer is due here tonight for his month's vacation. You'll be glad to see your old boss, huh?" The question had an entirely different effect on Pug Perry from what might have been supposed. He dropped the spike and twisted his brow in thought. "Common tonight, is he? Shucks." Over at the other end of the bunkhouse, Big Hat was making the final adjustments of tie and hat, which marked the beginning of an eventful night. Rumor freely predicted that Big Hat was going to pop the question that night. Dottie Manners had been blowing first hot then cold, but for all that, it was easy to see that the big form of Pug Perry held for her a certain attraction, a fascination that seemed irresistible. Old Walrus had summed the situation up nicely when he had remarked earlier that afternoon, "Dottie's really in love with Big Hat if she'd listen to her heart, but when this here big pug's around her heart don't get a chance. She's got the idea she likes a manly man, a go-get'em, two-fisted heavyweight. Shucks." Big Hat, heedless of the conversation between Walrus and Pug, clanked to the door and swung into the saddle of his waiting horse. Pug's eyes suddenly lit up with a cunning light. "Common, tonight is he, and she likes a go-get'em, does she? Walrus, get me a hoss." Walrus sighed and gave an order to the wrangler. 15 minutes later, Pug Perry was galloping toward Coyote City. "Boys," piped Walrus, as soon as the sound of beating hoofs had gone. "Well, down the trail, I've got me a hunch old Pug Perry is aimin' to go chase Big Hat off the reservation tonight. Meb some o' ya better mosey on into town and give things a once over to make sure they're all fair and regular. Me, I gotta go on in and meet this here Fielding Spencer when the 8 o'clock bus gets in, and some of ya might just's well come along." For a moment there was silence while the men looked at one another. Big Hat was one of the most popular men at the ranch, and Pug Perry's stock had rapidly dropped until it was greatly below par. Feet hit the floor, voices arose in excited comment while men trooped out to the dark corrals at the cashier's window of the Palace Theater. Big Hat was getting his talking it standing up, as Walrus would have put it. In spite of the fact that his world was toppling about his ears, he was standing with a frozen smile on his lips. "No, Phil," Dottie Manners was saying, albeit with a sigh on her lips. "I may as well be frank. While there is much about you I admire, and while I care for you very much, still I'm not in love with you. My prince, charming, must be a big man, one of the kind who will sweep me off my feet, a regular go-getter. Oh, I can't tell you very well just what I mean, and I don't want to hurt your feelings, but I want a man who doesn't know what it is to be afraid, a big giant of a go-getter. Oh. Phil, I feel so funny. I just don't know how I do feel. I'll be a sister to you. Oh, how do you do, Mr. Perry? This is a lovely evening, isn't it?" Pug Perry growled at Phil and smiled at the girl. Standing beside her, with only the wicket of the cashier's window between them, he appeared a veritable giant, nor did Big Hat Phil Dunton dispel the impression. "Say," boomed Pug, "I got something to say to ya. It's something I wouldn't care to have everyone in the whole state hear, and maybe ya could close up that window or perhaps get somebody else to take your place." Her eyes lowered until the long lashes rested against her cheeks, while the warm color flooded her skin. "Why, maybe. Well, perhaps Mr. Dunton will excuse himself a while, and you can say anything you've got to say here, or maybe after the show." Pug turned to Big Hat, giving him a shove. "Beat it, kid." The shove knocked Phil's hat off where it fell with a plump on the floor of the theater lobby. Appearing more diminutive than ever, Phil stood, white-faced, looking up at the distorted features of the giant. At that instant, there came the honking of the horn of the 8 o'clock bus as it pulled in from Yuma, but neither of the men heard it. Something there was in Phil Dunton's eyes that caused the girl to gasp, something that caused Big Pug Perry to reach in his pocket. When Pug's hand came out, he brought with it a piece of twisted spike. His great fingers began to twist and untwist the metal. When he had tied it into a veritable snarl of bends and twists, he again reached into his pocket. "Look at this," he announced. He had withdrawn a silver dollar. He took it in his fingers, gave a quick twist, and bent it double. "Look at this," he announced. He was standing on his tiptoes and smashing his open palm against Pug's cheek, "and then take this." The slap was followed with a wild swing. Pug Perry stood there. The blow fell upon his shoulder, hardly jarring his huge bulk. He looked down upon his diminutive antagonist with an expression of surprised incredulity, as though his eyes had not seen correctly. Then, suddenly, there came over his face an expression of fear, and he made for the door. Behind him, a wildly flying tornado of feet and fists, came Big Hat Phil, urged on by that wild fury which is only known in men, of small stature and big spirit. Pug's retreat became a rout, and he dashed madly down the street, Phil tearing along behind, swinging now and then to the back of the giant's head, administering a kick every few feet, begging the huge hulk to turn around and fight like a man. Walrus stood at the edge of the dusty street, the suitcase of Fielding Spencer in his hand, the director standing at his side, with wide open eyes. He watched the strange sight as Pug Perry, begging for mercy, dashed down the street, Big Hat Phil bringing up the rear. "Fur, the love, oh Mike," he gasped. The director laughed. "I see your men have taken Pug Perry's measure," he said. Walrus turned to him. "Meanin' what?" "Why, that man's a physical coward. I tried to tell you when you wanted him for the job. He's champion strong man, but he's deathly afraid of fist fights. He got his face all mashed up in an automobile accident so that he's fearfully sensitive about it, but that, coupled with his great strength, makes him a valuable man to use as an extra in fight scenes, though even then we have to fake a lot of the stuff so that there's not the slightest chance of his getting hurt. As long as he can bluff a fellow by his stunts of twisting iron bars and all that, he's a regular bully, but a 2-year-old baby could run him off the ranch. I thought you'd found it out. I kept trying to tell you, but you wouldn't listen. You fell for his face and his strong man stunts." The walrus looked meditatively down the street, then back to the cashier's office of the picture show. "Say, Spencer, do me a favor, will ya?" The director did not hesitate. "Uh-huh. Well, just don't say a word of that to any of the boys. Keep it under your hat." The visitor looked his surprise. "Why so, and for how long?" Walrus cast his faded blue optic upon the form of Big Hat Phil, who was marching back down the street, his chest thrown out, arms swinging, walking straight toward the Palace Theater. "Oh, not very long," replied Walrus, "just until after the wedding of this go-getter over there." Transcriber's note: this story appeared in West Magazine, January 20, 1926. It is believed to be in the public domain in the United States. Copyright status may differ in other countries. End of the project. GUTMBRGEBOOK twisted bars asterisk asterisk. Updated editions will replace the previous one. The old editions will be renamed. creating the works from print editions not protected by U.S. copyright. Law means that no one owns a United States copyright in these works, so the Foundation and you can copy and distribute it in the United States without permission and without paying copyright royalties. Special rules set forth in the general terms of use part of this license apply to copying and distributing project. Gutenberg trademark electronic works to protect the project GUTMBRGTM, concept and trademark. Project Gutenberg is a registered trademark and may not be used if you charge for an ebook, except by following the terms of the trademark license, including paying royalties for use of the Project Gutenberg trademark. If you do not charge anything for copies of this ebook, complying with the trademark license is very easy. You may use this ebook for nearly any purpose, such as creation of derivative works, reports, performances, and research. Project Gutenberg ebooks may be modified and printed and given away. You may do practically anything in the United States with ebooks not protected by U.S. copyright law. Redistribution is subject to the trademark license, especially commercial redistribution. Start full license. The full Project GUTMBRGTM license. Please read this before you distribute or use this work to protect the Project Gutenberg trademark mission of promoting the free distribution of electronic works by using or distributing this work or any other work associated in any way with the phrase Project Gutenberg. You agree to comply with all the terms of the full Project Gutenberg license available with this file or online at www.gutenberg.org/license. Section 1. General Terms of Use and Redistributing Project Gutenberg Electronic Works. 1A. By reading or using any part of this Project Gutenberg electronic work, you indicate that you have read, understand, agree to, and accept all the terms of this license and intellectual property trademark copyright agreement. If you do not agree to abide by all the terms of this agreement, you must cease using and return or destroy all copies of Project Gutenberg electronic works in your possession. If you paid a fee for obtaining a copy of or access to a Project Gutenberg electronic work and you do not agree to be bound by the terms of this agreement, you may obtain a refund from the person or entity to whom you paid the fee as set forth in paragraph 1E8, 1B. Project Gutenberg is a registered trademark. It may only be used on or associated in any way with an electronic work by people who agree to be bound by the terms of this agreement. There are a few things that you can do with most Project Gutenberg electronic works, even without complying with the full terms of this agreement. C. Paragraph 1C below. There are a lot of things you can do with Project Gutenberg electronic works if you follow the terms of this agreement and help preserve free future access to Project Gutenberg electronic works. See paragraph 1E below 1C. The Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the Foundation or PGLAF, owns a compilation copyright in the collection of Project Gutenberg electronic works. Nearly all the individual works in the collection are in the public domain in the United States. If an individual work is unprotected by copyright law in the United States and you are located in the United States, we do not claim a right to prevent you from copying, distributing, performing, displaying, or creating derivative works based on the work as long as all references to Project Gutenberg are removed. Of course, we hope that you will support the Project Gutenberg mission of promoting free access to electronic works by freely sharing Project Gutenberg works in compliance with the terms of this agreement for keeping the Project Gutenberg name associated with the work. You can easily comply with the terms of this agreement by keeping this work in the same format with its attached full Project Gutenberg license when you share it without charge with others. 1D. The copyright laws of the place where you are located also govern what you can do with this work. Copyright laws in most countries are in a constant state of change. If you are outside the United States, check the laws of your country in addition to the terms of this agreement before downloading, copying, displaying, performing, distributing, or creating derivative works based on this work or any other Project Gutenberg work. The Foundation makes no representations concerning the copyright status of any work in any country other than the United States. 1E. Unless you have removed all references to Project Gutenberg, 1E1, the following sentence with active links to or other immediate access to the full Project Gutenberg license must appear prominently whenever any copy of a Project Gutenberg work, any work on which the phrase Project Gutenberg appears or with which the phrase Project Gutenberg is associated, is accessed, displayed, performed, viewed, copied, or distributed. This ebook is for the use of anyone anywhere in the United States and most other parts of the world at no cost and with almost no restrictions whatsoever. You may copy it, give it away, or reuse it under the terms of the Project Gutenberg trademark license included with this ebook or online at www.gutenberg.org. If you are not located in the United States, you will have to check the laws of the country where you are located before using this ebook. 1. E2. If an individual Project Gutenberg electronic work is derived from texts not protected by U.S. copyright law, does not contain a notice indicating that it is posted with permission of the copyright holder, the work can be copied and distributed to anyone in the United States without paying any fees or charges. If you are redistributing or providing access to work with the phrase Project Gutenberg associated with or appearing on the work, you must comply either with the requirements of paragraphs 1E1 through 1E7 or obtain permission for the use of the work and the Project Gutenberg trademark as set forth in paragraphs 1E8 or 1E9. 1. E3. If an individual Project Gutenberg electronic work is posted with the permission of the copyright holder, your use and distribution must comply with both paragraphs 1E1 through 1E7 and any additional terms imposed by the copyright holder. Additional terms will be linked to the Project Gutenberg license for all works posted with the permission of the copyright holder found at the beginning of this work. 1. E4. Do not unlink or detach or remove the full Project Gutenberg license terms from this work or any files containing a part of this work or any other work associated with Project Gutenberg. 1. E5. Do not copy, display, perform, distribute, or redistribute this electronic work or any part of this electronic work without prominently displaying the sentence set forth in paragraph 1E1 with active links or immediate access to the full terms of the Project Gutenberg license. 1. E6. You may convert to and distribute this work in any binary, compressed, marked up, non-proprietary or proprietary form, including any word processing or hypertext form. However, if you provide access to or distribute copies of a Project Gutenberg work in a format other than plain vanilla ASCII or other format used in the official version posted on the official Project Gutenberg website, www.gutenberg.org, you must, at no additional cost, fee, or expense to the user, provide a copy, a means of exporting a copy, or a means of obtaining a copy upon request of the work in its original plain vanilla ASCII or other form. Any alternate format must include the full Project Gutenberg license as specified in paragraph 1E1, 1, E7. Do not charge a fee for access to viewing, displaying, performing, copying, or distributing any Project Gutenberg works, unless you comply with paragraph 1E8 or 1E9, 1, E8. You may charge a reasonable fee for copies of or providing access to or distributing Project Gutenberg electronic works, provided that you pay a royalty fee of 20% of the gross profits you derive from the use of Project Gutenberg works calculated using the method you already use to calculate your applicable taxes. The fee is owed to the owner of the Project Gutenberg trademark, but he has agreed to donate royalties under this paragraph to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. Royalty payments must be paid within 60 days following each date on which you prepare or are legally required to prepare your periodic tax returns. Royalty payments should be clearly marked as such and sent to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation at the address specified in Section 4, Information about Donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. You provide a full refund of any money paid by a user who notifies you in writing or by email within 30 days of receipt that /he does not agree to the terms of the full Project Gutenberg trademark license. You must require such a user to return or destroy all copies of the works possessed in a physical medium and discontinue all use of and all access to other copies of Project Gutenberg trademark works. You provide, in accordance with paragraph 1F3, a full refund of any money paid for a work or a replacement copy if a defect in the electronic work is discovered and reported to you within 90 days of receipt of the work. You comply with all other terms of this agreement for free distribution of Project Gutenberg trademark works. 1. E9. If you wish to charge a fee or distribute a project, Gutenberg trademark electronic work or group of works on different terms than are set forth in this agreement, you must obtain permission in writing from the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the manager of the Project Gutenberg trademark. Contact the foundation as set forth in section 3 below, 1F1F1. Project Gutenberg volunteers and employees expend considerable effort to identify, do copyright research on, transcribe and proofread works not protected by U.S. copyright law in creating the Project Gutenberg trademark collection. Despite these efforts, Project Gutenberg trademark, electronic works and the medium on which they may be stored may contain defects, such as, but not limited to, incomplete, inaccurate, or corrupt data, transcription errors, a copyright or other intellectual property infringement, a defective or damaged disk or other medium, a computer virus or computer codes that damage or cannot be read by your equipment. 1F2. Limited warranty disclaimer of damages, except for the right of replacement or refund described in paragraph 1F3, the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the owner of the Project Gutenberg trademark, and any other party distributing a Project Gutenberg trademark electronic work under this agreement, disclaim all liability to you for damages, costs, and expenses, including legal fees. You agree that you have no remedies for negligence, strict liability, breach of warranty, or breach of contract, except those provided in paragraph 1F3. You agree that the foundation, THE, trademark owner, and any distributor under this agreement will not be liable to you for actual, direct, indirect, consequential, punitive or incidental damages, even if you give notice of the possibility of such damage. 1F3. Limited right of replacement or refund. If you discover a defect in this electronic work within 90 days of receiving it, you can receive a refund of the money, if any, you paid for it by sending a written explanation to the person you received the work from. If you receive the work on a physical medium, you must return the medium with your written explanation. The person or entity that provided you with the defective work may elect to provide a replacement copy in lieu of a refund. If you receive the work electronically, the person or entity providing it to you may choose to give you a second opportunity to receive the work electronically in lieu of a refund. If the second copy is also defective, you may demand a refund in writing without further opportunities to fix the problem. 1F4. Except for the limited right of replacement or refund set forth in paragraph 1F3, this work is provided to you as is with no other warranties of any kind, express or implied, including but not limited to warranties of MERC chantibility or fitness for any purpose. 1F5. Some states do not allow disclaimers of certain implied warranties or the exclusion or limitation of certain types of damages. If any disclaimer or limitation set forth in this agreement violates the law of the state applicable to this agreement, the agreement shall be interpreted to make the maximum disclaimer or limitation permitted by the applicable state law. The invalidity or unenforceability of any provision of this agreement shall not void the remaining provisions. 1F6. Indemnity. You agree to indemnify and hold the foundation, the trademark owner, any agent or employee of the foundation, anyone providing copies of Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works in accordance with this agreement, and any volunteers associated with the production, promotion, and distribution of Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works, harmless from all liability, costs, and expenses, including legal fees that arise directly or indirectly from any of the following which you do or cause to occur: a distribution of this or any Project Gutenberg work; b, alteration, modification, or additions or deletions to any Project Gutenberg work; and c, any defect you cause. Section 2. Information about the mission of Project Gutenberg. Project Gutenberg is synonymous with the free distribution of electronic works in formats readable by the widest variety of computers, including obsolete, old, middle-aged, and new computers. It exists because of the efforts of hundreds of volunteers and donations from people in all walks of life, volunteers and financial support to provide volunteers with the assistance they need are critical to reaching Project Gutenberg goals and ensuring that the Project Gutenberg collection will remain freely available for generations to come. In 2001, the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation was created to provide a secure and permanent future for Project Gutenberg and future generations. To learn more about the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation and how your efforts and donations can help, see Sections 3 and 4 and the Foundation Information page at www.gutenberg.org, Section 3. Information about the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. The Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation is a nonprofit, 501(c)(3) educational corporation organized under the laws of the state of Mississippi and granted tax-exempt status by the Internal Revenue Service. The foundation's EIN, or federal tax identification number, is 64622-1541. Contributions to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation are tax deductible to the full extent permitted by U.S. federal laws and your state's laws. The foundation's business office is located at 41 Watchung Plaza 516, Montclair, NJ 7042, USA, +1-862-621-9288. Email contact links and up. To date contact information can be found at the foundation's website, an official page at www.gutenberg.org/contact, Section 4. Information about donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. Project Gutenberg trademark depends upon and cannot survive without widespread public support and donations to carry out its mission of increasing the number of public domain and licensed works that can be freely distributed in machine-readable form accessible by the widest array of equipment, including outdated equipment. Many small donations, $1 to $5,000, are particularly important to maintaining tax-exempt status with the IRS. The foundation is committed to complying with the laws regulating charities and charitable donations in all 50 states of the United States. Compliance requirements are not uniform, and it takes a considerable effort, much paperwork, and many fees to meet and keep up with these requirements. We do not solicit donations in locations where we have not received written confirmation of compliance. To send donations or determine the status of compliance for any particular state, visit www.gutenberg.org/donate. While we cannot and do not solicit contributions from states where we have not met the solicitation requirements, we know of no prohibition against accepting unsolicited donations from donors in such states who approach us with offers to donate. International donations are gratefully accepted, but we cannot make any statements concerning tax treatment of donations received from outside the United States. U.S. laws alone swamp our small staff. Please check the Project Gutenberg web pages for current donation methods and addresses. Donations are accepted in a number of other ways, including checks, online payments, and credit card donations. To donate, please visit www.gutenberg.org/donate, Section 5. General information about Project Gutenberg Electronic Works. Professor Michael S. Hart was the originator of the Project Gutenberg concept of a library of electronic works that could be freely shared with anyone. For 40 years, he produced and distributed Project Gutenberg ebooks with only a loose network of volunteer support. Project Gutenberg ebooks are often created from several printed editions, all of which are confirmed as not protected by copyright in the U.S. unless a copyright notice is included. Thus, we do not necessarily keep ebooks in compliance with any particular paper edition. Most people start at our website, which has the main PG search facility, www.gutenberg.org. This website includes information about Project Gutenberg, including how to make donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, how to help produce our new ebooks, and how to subscribe to our email newsletter to hear about new ebooks. This is the end of the audiobook. Thank you for listening. You can listen to and download more audiobooks at threeords.com.